Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability. This week, Disrespect interviewed OCAP spokesman John Clark about what the McGuinty government is using your health for. It turns out, in John Clark's view, that your health is capital for business. Disrespect welcomes to the show today John Clark from OCAP to speak about the rally for the special diet benefit and progress being made. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
How was the rally?
It was actually a really impressive rally. We mobilized a crowd of slightly in excess of 600 people. It was focused entirely on the special diet, and the numbers of people that came out was encouraging for a relatively short period of mobilizing effort, but more impressive was actually the makeup of the crowd.
I mean, yeah?
It was a crowd made up overwhelmingly of people directly affected. In terms of Toronto's mobilization around the special diet supplement, people from the Somali community have been absolutely at the backbone of it.
Really?
And their presence in the thing was really striking and really, really powerful.
Wow. Ernie Lightman suggested that the Liberals simply don't regard these voters as contributing to Liberal fortunes, and yet there's 760,000 of them. And then there's their families.
Yes.
And then there's the people who care for them, doctors and whatever, other professionals. I'm sure all but a very few of them voted Liberal in the last election.
Yeah.
And it's essentially a swing vote, because all the people on fixed incomes are desperate to survive.
Yes.
So it's a swing vote. Why are they not courting it?
Well, I think it has to be understood that governments, while they may have to make tactical shifts in this or that direction based on voter discontent or voter approval, they are actually implementing an agenda. It's an international agenda. It's very much, it's been described as neoliberalism, but it really is to transfer wealth to those who are already richest in society, and to do that primarily through the profits of corporations. I think that the dismantling of social programs, especially income support programs for people who are unemployed and poor, is a very, very key part of that strategy. And so, McGuinty, of course, would, and even more skillfully, Pupatello, would talk a good line about addressing poverty and all these things. But if you're going to pay people extremely low wages, you cannot have a situation where the alternative is a welfare check that will actually put some level of groceries on the table for families.
Well, that's true.
If you take the income of let's say a single person on Ontario Works, which at the moment stands at $536 a month maximum.
Right.
If you have a situation where someone is facing that, then the reality is that they're going to be forced to take any kind of employment, even under-the-table employment, even one that pays below the minimum wage, even one that denies them any basic rights as defined by the Employment Standards Act.
Right.
But if somebody has a $250 special diet supplement on top of that, then they're in a position to make some choices about where they're prepared to work and how they're prepared to be treated. And that's really the name of the game. I'm convinced that it's not about voter sympathy, and it's not in the end about saving money. Carol Gore in the Toronto Star made the point that to index social assistance rates to inflation would this year have cost less than the government gave away as a direct giveaway to Casino Windsor. So, I mean, it isn't primarily a fiscal question. It's about the kind of societal, economic, social changes that they're trying to implement.
Well, you make a convincing case.
Right. Well, I think the response of the Liberal government to the crisis, from their point of view, that emerged around the special diet, really has nothing to do with medicine, nothing to do with healthcare. In fact, it has everything to do with jeopardizing people's health. Their real intention is to preserve income support programs in this province as a means of channeling people into the lowest paying, worst jobs on offer.
And keeping the income support low so it continues to do that.
Precisely. I mean, we were responding to a situation where in the last 10 years, 40% of the spending power of social assistance has been lost through direct cuts and through inflation.
And in fact, the Income Security Advocacy Center has gotten behind that figure, haven't they?
That's quite correct. That's quite correct. And so in that situation, what may originally have been thought of as a supplement available to people in fairly exceptional circumstances became, from the standpoint of protecting people's health, a prescription that really fitted the bill for every one of the 760,000 people on social assistance.
Right.
The reality is that in order to provide for yourself and for your family an adequate and nutritious diet, as the Ontario Ministry of Health would itself define it,
right,
you need the supplement.
Right.
Therefore, it's not an unreasonable process of thinking that larger and larger numbers of medical professionals have embraced that, from the standpoint of defending people's health, the supplement was a necessity.
You've raised a number of interesting points that bear questioning, and I'm going to try and hold them in my mind before we go on. First of all, the Ministry of Health, how do they define adequate diet?
I certainly haven't done any extensive research regarding the Ontario Ministry of Health standards, but I believe that they work by a similar process to the Canada Food Guide, which is based, I understand, on a sort of a upskirt of goods kind of approach.
Which doesn't include the things people often buy at the grocery store, such as razors or soap or deodorant or any of those things.
That's
just
quite
food.
Correct.
Right, yeah. So it's not even a grocery store guide. It's a guide for what goes into your mouth, right? And that's it.
Exactly correct.
So it's a very limited, narrow definition, and yet benefits have for some time. How long have they been unable to meet that definition?
Well, from the very first days in 17th century England that they established workhouses for the poor, the intention has always been to ensure that the rates provided would be as abysmally low as they possibly could be. That didn't change. The reality is that people in the early 90s who were living on social assistance were certainly living below the poverty line. But with the advent of an increasingly overt, what we might describe as a neoliberal economic and political agenda in the province, the driving down of social assistance rates in real terms has become an absolute imperative. And that's why I think we've seen the cuts that took place under Harris, and those cuts being consolidated and deepened by McGuinty and Sandra Pupatella.
It strikes me that the doctor's role in this is rather larger than has come to light so far. The OMA was apparently consulted on this, and I'm shocked that some doctors feel intimidated because they're ignorant of the circumstances of the poor, and on the basis of some doctors feeling intimidated because they don't know the circumstances of the poor, and they have people appearing in their office and telling them the circumstances and telling them the solution because the doctors don't know it themselves, they go to the OMA and say, you've got to stop this. And the OMA says, certainly. And the hubris of a doctor who would say, we know everything about the role of nutrition in somebody's diet, and we know it enough to exclude everybody but the few people that we identify. And to do that, we need to identify everybody's illnesses,
yeah,
you know, and put them on government file.
Right. Well, I think it needs to be said, and I'm really glad that this comes up, is certainly there have been dozens of health providers, including doctors, who have worked tirelessly, in some of them in the clinics that were organized, the community-based clinics where the diet supplement was prescribed, and some of them in their own private practice have worked very, very hard and done an incredible amount of work, and they're all to be congratulated. But at the same time, it needs to be said that there has been an enormous reservoir of conservative, almost poor bashing within the medical profession, and that surfaced around these complaints of so-called harassment of doctors that came to the Ontario Medical Association. And the Ontario Medical Association's role in this has been shameful from the standpoint of the treatment of the poor, but also a travesty in terms of any concept of democracy and respect for members of their own profession. The OMA chose to collaborate with Pupatello and the Liberal government in designing this incredibly restrictive new policy.
Yeah.
And at the same time, deliberately, despite requests while it was proceeding, deliberately excluded those frontline doctors that were actually involved in providing the supplement to people. So the OMA needs to be called to task, and its behavior has been absolutely shameful, and they should hang their heads in shame for their role in this.
The OMA and the CPSO have never been friendly towards nutritional medicine, have never been friendly even towards environmental medicine. They've always extracted from their membership a few conservative, narrow-minded members to pass judgment on people who who need these kinds of treatments and deprive them of support for them?
Well, I think there will be interesting debates and struggles within the various bodies that represent and even regulate medical professionals, and that will be very healthy. But it isn't, of course, primarily the area in which we're going to be able to challenge this. We're going to challenge it on the basis of the political decision that was made by the people governing out of Queen's Park. And,
right.
And that's where we're going to have to focus our attention. But I must say, should the OMA be shaken up and forced to come to terms with what it's done, that would be a very healthy side effect of the whole thing.
Yeah, and it seems almost an inevitable side effect if you're to be successful.
Right.
I understand there's also an issue around privacy. I mean, these illnesses are being proposed to be disclosed to the government as it reviews special diet benefits. So now we're creating a file outside of doctors' offices, even outside of OHIP's offices.
No, I mean, not just the government in the sense that it's going to go to some private file somewhere. These forms are going to have to be turned into to welfare and ODSP offices. And people are going to have to declare medical conditions that they certainly wouldn't normally want to have medically unqualified welfare workers pass judgment on.
Well, that's true, too.
I mean, including HIV/AIDS, which
yep.
now has to actually be declared as a condition and then handed over to a welfare worker
yep.
for God knows what ramifications and assumptions.
We had Gary Block on the show here a while ago, interviewing him before the decision came down. I understand he's filed against this requirement?
He has. He's actually taken a complaint up with the Privacy Commissioner.
Oh, okay.
And the reality is, I think if we're going to tackle this, OCAP's role primarily is to mobilize people directly affected in communities under attack. But we are very glad to see this thing being challenged at all different levels by all kinds of different people. So we have Gary's complaint to the Privacy Commissioner, and then we have more and more organisations that aren't immediately representative of poor people starting to speak out as well, and that's really really healthy.
Yes, I've noticed that people who would normally not speak for the poor but are in a position to have mobilised behind this initiative.
Yes.
And the truth about the level of benefits for people on fixed incomes.
Yes.
Now, that 760,000 figure you mentioned, that includes ODSP, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, yes.
But it doesn't include everybody with a disability. Many of them are on this $500-and-some-odd welfare rate.
That's correct, yes. One of the unrepaired legacies of the Tory years was the making it progressively harder for people to access long-term disability.
Have we got a bunch of Tories with red ties in Queen's Park?
McGuinty has come to power on an entirely hypocritical and false promise to change things, and I think his strategy is perhaps not to cut as directly and deeply as the Tories have done. The bulk of their work was completed, but at the same time to consolidate the common sense revolution, to allow the effects of it to compound with the passage of time.
Okay.
So it is, for example, that McGuinty made an incredibly modest election promise, insofar as he got into any specifics, to index social assistance payments to the cost of living, and he's even reneged on that that very, very tiny and inadequate promise that he made. Hence, when McGuinty leaves office, unless we can change that, which we're certainly working on, you'll be in a situation where people are actually worse off at the end of the Liberal regime than they were at the beginning of it, at the end of the Tory years.
And now for a short break from our interview.
What's he building in there? What the hell is he building in there? He has subscriptions to those magazines. He never waves when he goes by. He's hiding something from the rest of us. He's all to himself. I think I know why. He took down the tire swing from the pepper tree. He has no children of his own, you see. He has no dog. He has no friends. And his lawn is dying. What about all those packages he sends? What's he building in there? Light on the stairs. What's he building in there? I'll tell you one thing, he's not building a playhouse for the children. What's he building in there? And what's that sound from underneath the door? He's pounding nails into a hardwood floor. And I swear to God, I heard someone moaning low. And I keep seeing the blue light of a TV show. He has a router and a table saw. And you won't believe what Mr. Stitches saw. There's poison underneath the sink, of course. But there's also enough formaldehyde to choke a horse. What's he building in there? What the hell is he building in there? I heard he has an ex-wife in some place called Mayor's Income, Tennessee. And he used to have a consulting business in Indonesia. But what's he building in there? He has no friends, but he gets a lot of mail. I'll bet he spent a little time in jail. I heard he was up on the roof last night signaling with a flashlight. And what's that tune he's always whistling? What's he building in there? What's he building in there? We have a right to know.
Now, back to our interview in progress.
There doesn't seem to be a political solution.
Well, I mean, there's this sort of... Sometimes there's an assumption that something like social assistance or unemployment insurance or whatever we may be dealing with was somehow planned by governments because they wanted to operate in the on behalf of the general good of the citizenry. But the reality is that these programs came into existence primarily because of the organized discontent of people who were denied the benefits of such programs, and they were won on that basis. And it seems to me a logical extension of that proposition to say that in a fight like the fight to preserve the special diet supplement or win a substantial increase in social assistance rates in lieu of it, it's really going to come down to a question of whether those directly affected acquiesce or rebel against the situation.
Yes. Yeah. So where are the doctors with this now? Did Gary Block filed with the Privacy Commissioner, the other doctors?
Yeah, I mean...
They're behind him, or they have their own initiatives?
Well, I think, you know, the medical providing community is somewhat split on this. We are seeing, I think, a larger and larger number of medical professionals, including doctors, who are very sympathetic and are ready to speak out. There's plans afoot to organize through the medical allies a town hall meeting.
Oh. Until this protest with the Privacy Commissioner or some other measure takes effect to stop this legislation, what effect can people on benefits expect to see?
Well, just really... A huge return at the moment, I'm afraid, to poverty and hunger.
Are they literally going to rescind all the special diet benefits for review?
Yeah, well, first of all, yes. I mean, first of all, the door is going to be closed on new applicants and has been already.
Yep.
But, yes, I mean, people are going to be, start to get the new forms in the mail, and that most people won't be able to comply with, and even if they do, we only provide them a tiny fraction of the $250.
So on top of the 40% cuts, we're going to see, for these people who get the special diet, we're going to see another $250 a month, essentially, cut.
Absolutely. It's going to have a disastrous impact on a lot of people.
Evictions and homelessness and...
Well, that's been the
and medical problems.
Absolutely, and that's been the factor in creating so many evictions, is the fact that the only way people can put enough food on the table for their own families is to go short on the rent, and that's been why this has been happening. And it's going to happen much more now, and everybody that was getting the special diet is going to get their forms in the mail, and then
everybody.
They have 90 days to...
Nobody's exempt.
nobody will be exempt. They will systematically move through the entire population of people that's getting the...
Even people who've been promised that their entitlement is permanent are going to be now reviewed.
Well, I'm afraid count for nothing.
Yeah.
And mind you, that's, of course, I stress, that's what the government intends. Whether the government is actually going to get away with this attack, I think in OCAP we're pretty, we feel a great sense of optimism and confidence that we can actually beat this thing, because we've never seen people so ready to mobilize, so energized, so determined to defend themselves and their families. And that's, I think, going to be the deciding factor. And I don't frankly know if McGuinty and Pupatello have the stomach for what's coming down.
No. Can we look to you for updates as this progresses?
Certainly, you're welcome to call, and whether just to get information or do interviews or at any time. But that, you might like to just go to our website and get yourself put on our email list.
All right.
And then we'll certainly, you know, that way you'll keep directly updated on everything that's happening.
So I take it this is something that a listener could do as well. They could go to your website, www.ocap.ca.
That's right.
And there they could find a dialogue box or a checklist to get on your mailing list.
That's right, yes.
What would you like to say to the interview that hasn't been addressed?
The only thing I'd like to perhaps conclude on is that I think that a decisive victory around the special diet supplement to win its restoration or to win a very, very significant increase in social assistance rates would be a very, very infectious kind of a victory. And it would open the door. It would open the door for people who are organizing around workplace conditions, people who are organizing around the issues of injured workers. I think it would be a mistake to think that there's any conceivable political formation that's going to come in at Queen's Park that's going to turn the clock back without an awful lot of prodding from the community.
Right. All right. What can you recommend people do? First of all, they can sign up for your newsletter.
Certainly can. And we would like to see people contact Sandra Pupatello, the minister, send letters, have organizations put in resolutions. And we also hope that people will actually join us in mobilizing. One of the things that we need to do for sure is mobilize to actually on short notice confront these government figures at their public events. And so we want to build up a real sort of rapid deployment capacity.
All right.
And people that want to be involved should certainly contact us.
And does that include people outside Toronto?
Well, it certainly does. I mean, the fact is that, you know, it's an unfortunate reality of the way society is planned, that the big center seems to get all the, all the attention and the focus. But this is a provincial government, and if they're only being challenged in the one ultra-major urban center and not being challenged throughout the northern Ontario right through, so that's going to weaken our campaign considerably. We need people everywhere to be engaged in this campaign.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Start working in the fields and take to the road. Walking up north. Looking for a job and land of plenty. Got plenty of nothing right here. Friend told me Chicago money grows on trees. Money grows on trees.
At the middle of the show, McMaster's own Mike's Mood Swings tipped us to Tom Waits from Mule Variations, What's He Building? At the end of the show, Russell Marsland from Dig Deep, When Money Grew on Trees. Disrespect asks you to send us your suggestions for disability discrimination-related topics for interviews for the show, radio.stories@gmail.com. Disrespect is exploring a nationwide opinion poll prior to the next election about provincial politicians in support of people with disabilities. If you have a complaint or you have a kudo about a politician, please send it to radio.stories@gmail.com. Disrespect's interviews are digitally edited from live, telephone, or studio interviews.